Now, what we would be doing in the next couple of minutes would be each of the speakers up in the panel here, beginning with Richard Smith, who would start with a review of what we've been doing within the Teaching English in Large Classes Network, which is now more about teaching English in difficult circumstances. And then we'll listen to the work of our colleague Prem in Nepal. And then after Nepal, Amol will be talking about his experiences with teachers in India. And then I'll share some experiences with the Teacher Association in Cameroon. And then Rama will conclude. And then we hope that we'll have about 15, 20 minutes of discussion and responding to your questions. So Richard, that's technology for you.
Okay, so I've got a handout which I've uploaded to this to our website, actually, of Telconnect, which is the group that links us all in different ways. So you may want to download the handout from there if you have this possibility. Or you can see the website address, and it's also there, this, the handout. With we're going to put the PowerPoints from each of our presentations onto that website, and look, you can look for it under presentation. So, in my short 10 minutes, where are we now? How have we got here? And just an overview of some initiatives which might be engaging and developing teacher agency or teacher autonomy, as I've been theorizing it. And the handout is designed to just provide lots of different links and resources for you. So basically that's what I'm going to provide, I hope. Other places to go for you. So it goes back to the phrase sort of teaching English in difficult circumstances, as you probably know, goes back to a book by Michael West, written in 1960. And this is how he defined difficult circumstances, emphasizing the size, the class size. Of course, Harry laughs at this definition of 40, 30 or 40, because he's experienced, as you know, teaching classes of 200 or more. So for him, this is not a large class. But we can debate for a long time what is a large or small class. We can also talk a lot about, you know, should we use the phrase difficult circumstances still? And that we may come to that. But the point of using this phrase still is that, as Harry said, it's still a sort of under-considered area within, let's call it, central ELT discourse, as we have at ITEF or as we have in the major journals. And of course, the difficult circumstances, like Harry described, or as it's captured in this definition, are normal circumstances around the world. This is the majority of situations of English teaching around the world. It's only when we see the world of ELT from here that it looks like they're difficult circumstances. But these are normal circumstances when seen from the perspective of people in these countries, in these contexts. It's interesting that Michael West says in 1960 the problem has become exacerbated recently. Well, we can say that also now, I think, because class sizes, for example, seem to have been increasing due to partly the UNESCO goals of development, getting more and more primary students into classrooms. And it seems to have been successful in many cases, but the expansion of schools, of teacher supply, hasn't met that increase in demand. That's just to show you the website of Telconnect, which is a group that has come about since about 2008. Fawzia Shamim and I set it up. It's now led by Harry and Prem, right at the end there. So you'll find that we've done a lot actually in this area of trying to provide resources for teachers, but perhaps more specifically teacher trainers in contexts where they don't have enough resources to prepare teachers for teaching in the kind of contexts that Harry introduced. Now, over the years, from 1960, you can, if you click on that later, you can hear a recording of Michael West talking about difficult circumstances. And you can also click on a recording of Harry, our president, talking in 2007 when he was a student at Warwick. Basically, the point I wanted to make there was we've moved from a position where we have Michael West, a British, actually colonial educator, because his experience was in Bengal before independence. And talking about it from a British perspective, to Harry talking about it from the perspective of a teacher in such circumstances. And I think that's what we have tried to encourage through Telfnet. And if we play the recording, which we don't have time for, I'd just invite you to go there again, in the same place, if you wanted to download the links. And this has been, this is a very welcome development. Paola talked at the end of her talk, a plenary, about the need to listen to teacher voices. And this is very much has been our goal within the loose network of people interested in within Telfnet, to leave behind conceptions of small class teaching as norm and teaching English in difficult sentences somehow as a problem, but to start from the bottom up and see how teachers themselves perceive their situations, not necessarily prejudging it to say that they are difficult or problematic, and actually to look for cases of success in those teachers' experience as well. Focusing on issues of practical concern to teachers themselves and supporting teachers develop appropriate methodology from the bottom up, for example, through practitioner research. This was has always been one of the kind of goals that we've had. And also to adopt a more qualitative, exploratory, case study, or narrative kind of approach to gather stories from teachers. And PREM, for example, has been very successful in doing that. I don't think we can all say that we have done a lot of research. But what I can say today is I'm quite proud that we've got all this activity to report on now in 2019, which is not necessarily research activity, but very, very strong initiatives that we're going to hear about. Well, we had early publications here, that's just to show you. And you can go and find more about those if you like. We've also had some plenary talks in different places. I just cited one or two that I did, and one is in Nepal, one is in Cameroon. And Harry will talk later about something that arose from that experience with Cameroon. And of course, Harry himself gave a plenary here at IITEFL a couple of years ago. So can we say maybe that, and two recent publications. The second one is the one that Harry and Fawzia edited, a major achievement, I think, for the network. And also the one before that with Amal and I edited, which has stories from teachers from a workshop that we did in Nepal. On the left there, and the workshop was sponsored by the Hornby Trust. And the cover there on the right is Harry and Fawzia's book, which he mentioned. Well, have we moved perhaps to a sort of mainstreaming of teacher research, of teaching English in difficult circumstances? Here we are with these publications. Harry's president of IITEFL, which is fantastic. We're here in the main hall of IITEFL, whereas we used to be in smaller rooms. Maybe it would actually be better for us if we were in a smaller room, I think. These are difficult circumstances for us, aren't they, to interact with you. But is there a kind of mainstreaming, then, of teaching in difficult circumstances? Well, I think we should recall Harry's words this morning. We have an African president of IITEFL, which is absolutely fantastic, but much more needs to be done to gain recognition of the teachers around the world and their voices, as Paola was saying, that are neglected. I'm just going to mention three initiatives which I've been involved with, which I think have been trying to address problems of teachers in difficult circumstances, building from the bottom up, listening to teachers' voices, developing agency in different ways. And first is a British Council project, and I think we should acknowledge the role of the British Council, actually, in many of these initiatives, not all of them. This was the Champion Teachers Programme in Latin America, and the ideas of exploratory action research, which have been developed in that context, as a kind of realistic, gradual, jargon-free way of doing teacher research focused very much on teachers' own development and not imposing an extra burden, but finding ways that teachers can use, can investigate their own situations for their own benefit, for themselves, not for the purposes of academic research, but as a way of developing themselves and for the benefit of their students. I think you can find out more about that through these links. I won't have time to talk now about that anymore. So here are two books that you can go to. And of course, Paola is the co-author. Yes, you want me to stop now, Harry? Okay. Harry's going to be talking about teacher association research projects in Cameroon. I think Rama will talk about the idea of children and teachers as co-researchers in India. I've been very interested in learner autonomy and the role of learner autonomy in difficult circumstances when students need to, in a way, rely on themselves. But we're talking today about teacher autonomy and the development of teacher agency. And as we are more and more sort of evaluating these projects, and we are seeing, I think, clearly that teachers are gaining a sense of agency and sense of autonomy. So I think I'm going to leave it there, just with a quote from Michael West, who himself was interested in the role of autonomy in difficult circumstances. And that's what he thought. Well, maybe we need to remember the learners and their agency, but it's very interesting that he strongly emphasized the role of students' own autonomy. So thank you very much.
Namaste. My name is Prem Jat. I teach at Tribhuvan University in Nepal. What I will be sharing today is basically my experience working with teachers at Tribhuvan University. My title is Building Teacher Agency Through Teacher Research in Peace Service Teacher Education in Nepal. So I'd like to describe how it is difficult circumstances, what is pre-service teacher education. So I just go through the steps and the processes that I took to develop more teacher agency in the so I call it Teachers for Teachers project and building teacher agency project. So that it's kind of engaging pre-service teachers in developing exploratory and collaborative skills, and basically connecting schools, establishing connections of pre-service teachers with the schools. And one of the major challenges in pre-service teacher education in Nepal is a big disconnect between programs and schools. And also engage them in identifying relevant issues and carrying out research. And also engage them in developing plans of action and implement building their practicum. So at the end of this teacher education program, they have to go to school and teach for 45 days and reflect on their experience working as a teacher in the school. Briefly, what is teacher agency? I take kind of ecological approach of teacher agency, which defines agency as the capacity of individuals, that is, as something individuals can claim to have or possess, but seen it as something individuals and the groups can manage to achieve or not, of course. And from this perspective, agency is to be understood as resulting from the interplay of individual capacity and environment conditions. So to give a brief background of the context. So one is, teacher education program, basically pre-service teacher education program, is mostly more theoretical, and the university, basically our university, Tsinghua University, so there's more than 90% of teachers in a public school and maybe private schools as well. So the context of my study is Central Department of Education, Tsinghua University, and mostly these the students who come to take our courses are from very rural setting. And the courses we offer are more interdisciplinary in nature, like sociolinguistics and applied linguistics, extensive reading, the more focus on literature, ELT methods and materials, second research methodology and thesis writing as well. And two courses that we negotiated with the policymakers and in order to develop more flexible courses to build teacher agency as a pre-service teachers in the ELD seminar and practicum. So that is what I will be highlighting here. So our context is, so we have very large class context, like about 250 in average in you know in each semester. So ELD young professional teachers come to take courses. And you know, we have mostly three semesters running consequently, so meaning more than 700 students so in each semester. And courses are developed by a group of experts, and those experts are overseen by teachers mostly, and they are fixed. And sources is the lack of library sources and lack of online journal public subscriptions, and teachers' pressures and workload. So they have to teach from early morning to sometimes evening. And teachers cannot change courses, and there is a huge connection of the program with teachers. And most courses are lecture-based and with occasional students' presentation, and there is a lack of institutional support for innovation. So with this context, so what I have done so far is how do we engage these in-service teachers, very young in-service teachers who really wish to be a good English language teacher in the future. So the first step we started doing was looking for some space for negotiation in the existing flows prescribed by the university. So one is the ELT seminar. So originally the purpose of this course was to help students develop their presentation skill. And there was no external evaluation, no requirement for the external exam, and practicum. So they have to go to schools, and then the department can develop guidelines for the students to go to practicum. So what we did was basically we asked students to go to schools first, rather than just sending them to schools without any preparation. Ask them to go to school first and do some observation. Talk to teachers and identify the issues and some new ideas in schools. And then in the third stage, so they come back to the department and they form the group and explore the issues further. And based on their common issues, these students are grouped into like 3 to 5 members. And they further explore the issues and through two ways. So one is reading, so you know, providing them extra reading and engage more in the discussions. So now at this stage they understand what they should be doing based on what they have seen as an issue in the school with their discussions with the teachers and their own colleagues and getting insights from them. And after that, the fourth stage is more writing, kind of very flexible and very not sounding academic, but in a more narrative fashion. So they write a concept paper and they prepare action plans. So how do they address actually the issues and problems they have seen in schools? So how do they do is basically build consensus among their group members and describe what their project is about and why they think that their project is important. So it's not only what project they should be doing, but they should also discuss and describe why their project is important for Capital Insight. And basically, that helped our students to come up with two categories of broader projects. So the first one is action research project, and the second one is more materials. So on the one hand, a group of students, some students came up with the idea of doing action research, and on the other hand, some students came up with the idea of developing material that they can actually implement in their practical. So this is one example. This is the book actually written by a group of students on using graffiti as an effective tool for classroom teaching. And how they make a plan is, the first they go to, they visit different cities of Kathmandu to collect graffiti by using their mobile phone and some camera as well. And categorize all these graffiti into four different themes. For example, women and gender issues, language, culture and identity, and health, and sanitation, and environment, something. And one major category was politics as well. And based on that categorization, they write a material for secondary level teachers. And basically, their focus of material development is seeing, noticing, drawing, meaning, and creating. So for 3 or 4 weeks, they work on this. And the material, like this, so I don't have enough copies. So basically, there are three broader themes in their material. So one is language-related activities, and another is describing sign and symbols related to the graffiti, and also drawing social meaning and the values. And students, and they ask students to create their own graffiti, so similar kind of graffiti. So this is one snapshot from the book, the material they have developed. For example, gender equality. So they focus on, the major focus of this lesson, for example, is develop critical thinking about gender equality, speak a paragraph about gender equality. So these are the language by these students, and awareness about gender equality and creating graffiti. And the two major activities they have included in for this chapter is activity, for example, pair work, discussion on issues from the pictures, and also make a chart with relevant pictures that reflects gender equality or inequality in the world. So that involves them to understand more social issues and at the same time using language in a more engaged fashion. So these are some pictures. And okay, and then they come up with their materials and their projects, and they share with among the colleagues and the faculty, and they improve. And after that, they implement for 4 weeks. They go to school and then implement what they have so far developed. And it's in after that, so they come back and they write reflection, and they also. They also further improve based on the feedback from and they write a report and share their own ideas how they can further improve, and they presented their projects in seminar and conferences. So far, we have organized 2 small scale seminars and 2 international conferences. So one reflection that students have so far is in terms of agency, this pre-service teacher, what they say is, I learned how to negotiate with my own friends and the teachers in the schools. It is not easy. People have different ideas, but it is important to address diverse opinions. Before, I used to think that I should be teaching as I was taught and read in the courses. But this process helped me develop confidence that I can now do something new. I know how to use graffiti and other art-based materials in my teaching. My students really like it. They have developed some wonderful arts, and all the students were not able to discuss graffiti in English, but they were motivated to talk, and I think it is important to do something new. So to conclude, it's important to focus, to introduce, like, what was researcher. I don't see a lot teacher research in the teacher program, and also focusing on building teacher agents, it's also important to help pre-service teachers connect with the schools and better understand the student challenges first before they go to the practical. And that's for creative ideas and innovations and all that.
Good afternoon. I'll be very brief. And in my brief presentation, I will be specifically arguing for the importance of affective support to develop teachers' agency who are working in very difficult circumstances. And in order to demonstrate how this might happen or this might be happening, I will share examples from very small teacher development voluntary groups called English Teacher Clubs. But before that, I would like to show a couple of pictures. This is the picture of a classroom. And here is another picture of a classroom where the teacher is managing two classes together. Now, if we compare these two pictures, it is very easy to jump to various inferences about difficult circumstances. We believe that certain things are very obvious to us and we can easily pinpoint which classroom shows difficult circumstances and which shows much less difficult circumstances. But that is one part of the story. But it's possible, I don't know, but I'm just imagining that it's possible that if we talk to the teachers teaching these classrooms, the teacher you see here on the screen may not have any complaints about the circumstances. The teacher may say, difficult, I don't see any difficulty. While if we go back to the earlier classroom, the teacher may say, oh, I'm really working in very terrible circumstances. I'm really unhappy, I can't do anything. These are various possibilities, but the point that I'm trying to make is, when we think of difficult circumstances, we should keep in mind the two dimensions. One is the existence of certain very real indicators that we can safely assume as showing difficult circumstances, the objective reality. But the other part is what the teacher in those circumstances thinks of them. So the actual things existing outside and what the teacher thinks in the mind, the reality and the mental construct. And I think they both work in conjunction. Similarly, I would also like to suggest that there are two dimensions of teacher agency. The definition that Prem showed earlier talks about the capacity. But then another definition that I am showing here on the slide is talking about agency as purely a mental state. So teacher may have or may not have capacity to do something. And so accordingly we might say they have or they do not have agency to do something. But in addition, teachers may believe that they have capacity, or they may believe that they don't have any capacity. In other words, they may believe that they have some agency and they may not believe that they have some agency. And both are very crucial, very important. I'm focusing more on the mental construct side of the difficult circumstances and of the teacher agency. And I personally believe that those things extremely importantly, crucially condition what teachers think and do in those circumstances. And since it's more of a mental, emotional kind of thinking or construct, the affective support becomes extremely important. One example that I'm going to share here is how some teacher development groups provide this specific affective support by which teachers get a sense of agency, become aware of their own agency, and find ways of living in their difficult circumstances. And the particular case I'm referring to is an English teacher club that I'm part of in my town, which began in around 2001. And it's almost 18 years and it's still going on. And another club in a neighboring town which started a year later and which is again going on. The club I'm talking about is a small group of about 10 to 12 teachers, mostly secondary teachers teaching in rural schools. who came together in a very crisis situation in 2001. The government changed the textbooks. The new textbook was radically different from whatever they were familiar with or they had taught in previous years. Completely different. And they were supposed to start teaching those textbooks in the beginning of the new academic year in July. And until June, there was no orientation, no training, no guides, no notes, no manuals, nothing. And they were really worried about how to deal with them. So what they did, they started meeting, sitting together on Sundays with a senior teacher, put their heads together and started devising practical plans how they might work with the textbook in their classrooms. Somehow they found ways of going through that crisis, but in that process, they discovered that there are hundreds of concerns and there is a lot of value in coming together, talking to each other, sharing in order to address those concerns. So they stayed back in the group. They continued to meet. And one of their top priorities was speaking in English, and they started practicing their spoken English in the groups. But these 18 years had been a fantastic journey of how, starting with very basic survival concerns, the teachers gradually grew into more larger, deeper and more crucial concerns, and also started getting into different roles. Many of them today are state level experts in curriculum design. They are still secondary teachers, still teaching their rural schools, but they are confident enough to design materials for the state teacher training. Now these English teacher clubs provided the affective support which was very important. The getting together did not necessarily always result in solutions. But first of all, when members started talking to each other about their concerns, by making their private concerns public and by hearing other thoughts and ideas, they started getting new ways of looking at their concerns. There was a sense of reassurance because many other members had very similar concerns, so they felt that they were not isolated individuals suffering in a particular situation. Later on, through again discussions, sharing, there were lots of ideas which they suggested each other to try out in their classrooms. But trying a new thing in a very prescriptive state-controlled education system itself is a very risky thing. As a teacher, I may not be confident that it is worthwhile, it is allowed, it's going to make any difference. Those were the beginning doubts. But being together and with the help of each other, they gathered the courage to try new things out. And the things did not work every time. But they always had a place to come back where they could share not only their successes but their failures, where they could gain the confidence to take risks, and where they could cry on each other's shoulders if there was something really a painful or very depressing kind of experience. So this is the kind of psychological affective support that the members gave each other. And the result was a change of mindset and change of approach. I would just like to show two examples what it means. About 10 years ago, I and my colleague conducted a study which compared the members of the clubs and the teachers who were not members of the clubs and how they approached the classroom practical problems. Now, in the first quote, a member of ETC says, "What? Whenever I come across this problem, the lack of motivation, I always try to know the reason behind it. I always find the same reason that our today's traditional methodology is what makes students passive. A non-member thinks of this in a different way and puts the blame on parents and says students are not interested because parents are not interested in this. And this is the last slide I'm going to show. Another example, large classes is typically quoted as indicator of the secret circumstances Gobind term. But an ETC member thinks of large classes as a given and says they have become the unavoidable vital reality of the present education system. Whether one likes it or not, one has to handle it. While the non-member again puts the blame on someone else and solves it. So I conclude by saying that these kinds of quotes and whatever I discussed earlier should give a clear idea in which cases teacher agency develops. And once the teachers develop this mental belief or mental construct that I have at least some agency to do something in the constraints that I am living with, that teacher is likely to actually do something about it. Thank you very much.
Teachers Association help develop the agency of our members who have now, we are seeing, transitioned from seeing themselves as mere teachers, ordinary teachers, which is an expression that's often used in Cameroon a lot, to informed practitioners who are capable of articulating their practice in a convincing manner and with conviction. Very quickly, the Camerata Research Project, when there was a TESOL symposium in Cameroon and the conversation at that conference showed that teachers were generally dissatisfied with the conditions of schooling, of the conditions in primary instead of the difficulties as a basis for proposing improvement to what was happening in their classrooms. And I've talked about classroom conditions in Cameroon, sometimes immensely large. My own experiences of teaching 235 teenagers in temperatures of up to 6 degrees Celsius in a classroom that was originally built for 80 students and lots of them staying outside. But it was also obvious at that conference that Camerata members were not able to carry out individual research, partly because initial teacher education did not address, specifically look at teacher research, but also because the association had tried several times to encourage teachers to do some form of action research and had offered money to encourage teachers to do that, but there was no one reporting on doing any action research. So we thought that making this part of the association's responsibility as a collective responsibility would help us gather a large amount of data from within the association and also help make us share whatever resources or whatever results came from the data we collected with the membership. So that's how we, Richard Smith and I at the time, asked teachers at the conference to think about a situation where they were able to do research and that they had the time to do research, and to think about up to 3 key research questions that they would like to investigate. So we collected research questions from 177 teachers, some of whom wrote up to 3, between 1 and 3 research questions. And the Camerata board put these questions, collected these questions with funding from the research team, and then arranged them into thematic areas, what they called research priorities. So for example, the next 2 to low resources, and the last 2 to large and multi-grade teaching. Now the reason for categorizing, there were 2 reasons for categorizing this research question. The first was that in subsequent conferences, we would be looking for speakers who could address some of these concerns, because these were the legitimate concerns of the teachers. But also we were hoping that researchers, local researchers in the country, would look at these research questions and use them as a basis, and even student teachers in the University College of Education would use this as a basis for their own research, and then maybe in the future feedback or share their results of their research with the association. Also at that conference, we had an open-ended questionnaire. We had a questionnaire that mainly asked teachers, it's 180 plus teachers, to write stories about successful lessons they had taught and reflect on them. And we received
And this questionnaire was distributed not just at the conference but also at the regional chapters, and we received responses from 501 teachers around the country. And these responses were also then collated and uploaded to the Kamelta website as a resource for teachers to share experiences or to see what their colleagues were doing elsewhere in the country. Right. We've talked about this in an article that Mr. Smith and I presented. But what came from the last part of the questionnaire, which specifically wanted them to comment on the questionnaire itself and what they felt about the research project, was that teachers were immensely positive. They were beginning to claim ownership of the research project. They felt that it was responding to their own needs. So, in terms of what we did later was that we started looking at some of this data, these responses from teachers, and there was a meeting in 2015 between the research team of ITEFL and committee members from Kamelta who were here, who were in the UK for an ITEFL conference. And then this team, the team of research SEEK and Kamelta members, analyzed some of the data, and this data was presented initially at the conference as a plenary in 2005 by me, 15, and also published on the research SEEK newsletter. In 2016, one of the teachers, the members of the association, Eric Ekembe, who is in the hall here, Eric, where are you? Okay. Wrote a book chapter that drew from this data. So that was the beginning of exploiting the data, and teachers could see that local researchers or teachers like them were writing about data that they themselves had provided. And in 2016, Eric and myself did a joint plenary at the Kamelta conference, still drawing from the data. So the decision was that the data would be exploited in different ways, and that the results of whatever research was done would be fed back to the teachers, because this data was reflecting their genuine concerns. And out of that was born the Kamelta Research Group. Now, the Kamelta Research Group started at the 2016 conference. We asked teachers who were interested in doing some form of research, or just classroom inquiry, or collaborative classroom inquiry, to indicate their interest. And so we formed a WhatsApp group, which we called the Kamelta Research Group. Now, two teachers, Eric again, and now a young teacher in her first 5 years of experience who was part of the research group, wrote another article, which they published through the Research SEEK newsletter. What are the group activities? The Kamelta group activities works on WhatsApp and face-to-face. They started by identifying their own common concerns from the research questions that were uploaded to the website. And then they also had brainstorming activities, so they identified motivation as their theme for 2 years, because that's where most members were interested in. So they had a lot of brainstorming about motivational practices on the WhatsApp group. So they have, every 2 weeks, they have a WhatsApp discussion for 2 hours, and then one of the members summarizes the discussion, and that is then shared to all members. So they did the brainstorming, they also looked at short articles about motivation and then reflected on these, but also reflected on their own teaching, and then paired up to do some kind of group training. And over a period of 1 year, they were now ready to start talking about research, and they invited other partners to talk to them about action research. One of the things they have done more recently is the teacher mobility scheme, which I want to share with you. And those show us what we have achieved in the research group. The teacher mobility scheme just involves two teachers working together, observing each other, talking to each other's students, getting feedback, and developing their lessons together. So, for example, we have had a change of practice because of the motivational scheme. The mobility scheme. So this is a classroom of a teacher before they joined the group, which was very teacher-fronted, with long text written on the board because they don't have resources and students responding. But what has happened in this example is that students are beginning to lead on the project. So teachers talk to their students, and the students in this example said they were bored with the textbook, they didn't even have the textbook, and the stories in the textbook were boring. They wanted to talk about more things around their environment. And so in the two classrooms, they identified things like refuse disposal in the city. This is in Yaoundé, which is not the cleanest of cities. So they decided that they wanted to advise the mayor of the city council on how to take care of the environment. And so the teachers designed a lesson with their students and taught in both classes. And these are letters to the mayor that the students have written. And you can see that they are proposing different things, including recycling. And as an example to the mayor, you would see on the picture to the left how they have recycled materials from around the environment. But to the right, this is a boy demonstrating how to cook a local dish in front of the class. So these teachers, by partnering with their students, are beginning to navigate the curriculum and their challenges in a way that shows that they are gaining more control and agency of the work they are doing. So the outcomes have been, and this is my last slide, changing classroom practice, as we have seen, but also they have improved, the teachers have improved in self-confidence and are now speakers at local conferences. In fact, two of our members of the research group had their abstracts accepted, their proposals accepted for the Africa TESOL conference in Abuja, which is the first time for us that these teachers are able to think beyond Cameroon and to share their experiences. We've also had publications in newsletters and book chapters like Eric's book chapter, but also the article they wrote together. And recently, one of our members had her article published in the Africa TESOL newsletter. They're beginning to be involved in free service training now. The University College of Education is inviting members of the group to share their experiences with free service teachers. And they're now supporting the transition of these free service teachers into the field. In fact, we have three former students who benefited from the group's participation in free service who have now become members of the group and are sharing experience. And lastly, there has been a sync between a kind of a partnership now. The Ministry of Education and the University College of Education are beginning to notice what is happening in the group and are beginning to feel involved and to invite the group. So we hope that this is a start to helping these teachers not only develop their own sense of agency, but to impact on what's happening in pre-service teacher education. Thank you.
I realize that I'm the last speaker and I don't even like to take more than 10 minutes, so I hope you have patience to listen to me. Can you all hear me? So that's the title. And I thought I would look at two questions, but leave that alone for the moment. Now, I'm trying to look at what are difficult circumstances, trying to understand it a little more than what is normally sort of talked about. And I started reading Paulo Freire, especially this book, which is Teachers as Cultural Workers. And he is writing letters to teachers about what things to do and what can happen and so on. And I found it very interesting. So he said something is difficult when facing it or dealing with it proves painstaking. In other words, when it presents an obstacle on some level. So there is a sense of difficulty. Immediately, I'm looking at what is teacher agency. It's being able to make professional judgments, self-directed practice, being autonomous, being daring, and so on. This is just, you know, made up by me, and which is a common kind of definition all our colleagues here spoke about. So keep that aside again. So we do a little bit of analysis of what these difficult circumstances are. There is a fear when one faces difficulty, there is a little bit of fear. It could be the fear of a storm, fear of a snake, fear of not being able to do something. And when that happens, there is difficulty. So difficulty and fear are related. There is also the subject, that person, and in our case, let's take only the teacher. The teacher who faces this problem, who faces fear, and which is the object, which is the situation. Along with this, there is also another component, which is the insecurity that comes up as a result of that fear. So the teacher in this case has some kind of an insecure feeling for various reasons. It could be because they don't have permanent jobs. It could be because they don't have chances of promotion. It could be because the principal, the head teacher, is very strict, and there are very top-down kind of directions that they have to follow, otherwise they might lose their jobs, and so on. But then this kind of fear could be real or imaginary. I think Amol talked about how it's a kind of perception. So how do you really confront this fear and that insecurity? What do you do about it? But the fear that the teacher gets, or any of us has, is concrete. You can't deny it. You'll have to accept it. It's very concrete. We must not deny it or allow it to paralyze us or immobilize us. So that's the first step to dealing with fear, dealing with that insecurity. Confront it. We need to educate it, all of various things. We need to educate it, control it, and in this act of controlling and educating and confronting comes up courage. Courage will be born. So when you learn to sort of accept it as a first step, not deny it, and then try to analyze it to see how real it is, and what are the reasons for it, and then take it up head on, then there is courage. And this courage, sorry, is the battery low.
It's okay.
It's a difficult circumstance.
It's okay for me.
So then there is one more very important thing. Courage is born out of this act of educating or controlling, confronting fear. There may be fear without courage. Now that's no good. We'll have to be very aware of that. The fear that devastates and paralyzes us, that fear is not very good. That is, you despair and then you give up, or there is apathy, that you need to guard against. There may be no courage without fear. There may never be any courage without fear. This is again craving. So that which speaks of humaneness as we manage to limit it and control it. So there is this courage, this fear, and the way we control it is a very humane kind of a process. So that's about courage. Now teacher agency, I'm trying to see as the birth of that courage. When the teacher manages to confront fear or insecurity that happens because things are not the best, not happening in the best way. Now, so we are looking at courage as an agency. I just want to give one or two examples of the projects that I've been working on in the last 3 or 4 years. One is called the Young Learners as Researchers Project, in which even Richard Smith was a member. Anna Maria from Warwick University, Richard Smith and I. And we worked with Indian school teachers with young learners. And this one was where the teachers helped young learners to become agents of change, or to ask questions, to take responsibility, and to question the usual curriculum, the teaching methodology, the textbook, and everything. So that was a very interesting project, because here the learner agency helped sustain teacher agency. I'll tell you how. I'll just give you one or two examples if there is time. The second project is the Teacher's Voices Conference that led to a book. I'm not giving you details of the book here, but I'm giving you my email ID, and if you want to get copies of that, I'll send it to you. In Bangladesh. And going by whatever is being described as difficult circumstances, especially in, say, Cameroon, Bangladesh is really, really in that kind of a situation. But teachers don't complain. probably they don't know any better. I shouldn't say this, but then they are quite happy to work with what is there. It's a given. And they confront, and then they are making do with things, and they are marvelous. They are all champions of teacher research, and then bringing about change and everything. Then there was the other most recent project, where there is one member, one mentor from that project, ARMS, who is Renu here, if you don't mind standing up. So these are also champions in one sense. They worked with mentees. That was also a British Council project. So one or two examples. Now we allowed, Anna Maria and I, when we worked with these teachers, had workshops and then tried to say how we can get students to question or allow freedom to question and so on. Students were quite happy to do this kind of a thing, very willing. And these were from very, very poor backgrounds and slums. These schools were in slums. They didn't have water for a bath every day and so on. That kind of situation. But then they started, for example, saying, now we will make puppets, and then you tell us a story based on those puppets. And they came up with drama that sort of captured or, you know, reflected the kind of problem they had at home of how girl children were not welcome.
Okay, just go on. Difficult circumstances.
What?
The mic is on.
The mic is on, just carry on.
So, I'll just get it.
Rama, you can do it here if you like.
You can do it.
Sit down.
I just want to give you one or two examples from this. When teachers gave this kind of freedom to children and they liked doing this, they also, in fact, just like Harry said, they made their own lessons, they made their own stories, and they made exercises on that because they found the books very boring. And then they said, now come, teach us this book. So they sat in groups and then made up stories and so on. And when this happened, when they put together the entire book, the year was over, and the teacher said, now what shall we do? When do I teach it? They said, oh, this is very bad kind of thing. Now, students do expect you to show responsibility, and they didn't sort of think that that book cannot be taught. But then anyway, they were very, very happy that they could do that. And when this happened and they moved on to another school, they wanted their teachers in the other school to do similar things. So the message kept spreading like this from one teacher to another, one teacher to another school. So now there is no way these teachers can just sit quietly or not do anything, because these students have taken it over themselves, upon themselves, to ask for things the way they would like it, and then they get the teacher to do it. Homework, holiday homework is a very standard thing in India. You cannot escape that. The teacher, it's a given. They have to do it, but they won't do it. Very few students brought holiday homework because it's usually boring. But then the teacher said, look, I can't do without holiday homework. It's compulsory. So what shall we do? They said, you let us design the holiday homework ourselves. So they sat down and thought of topics for holiday homework. And now from 30% to it increased to 80%, those who submitted the holiday homework. It goes on like this. Now, I don't want to... one teacher said in Bangladesh, for example, she said, primary teachers have no power. That's what they are made to believe, that they don't know that much, and they get very poor, low salaries. But she said, in this, by doing this project and presenting it at an institution which is known for research, it's an institute of Dhaka Institute of Research, and all the research programs happened there. And for them, it was like, you know, they were elevated to that kind of a level where academic researchers or professors presented papers at a seminar. So that was very, very empowering for them. And for the other teacher, she said, now I'm very excited that I'm the classroom changer, and I'm really proud of that. She realized how she can make changes to her own classroom. This was a large classroom, each class is about 60, 70, and so on. And then she also realized, I know now that I can't be living in my world, I'll have to live in children's world. Now that's the kind of magic. From the most recent project, I have one or two examples, is this teacher in West Bengal, in India, where children have to work in the field and they come to school during the day and they only get one meal a day, which is just plain rice. And this teacher, now she said, what do I talk to them about English teaching? They are living in very difficult circumstances. So it's going beyond English teaching. In fact, Freire talks about how any change is not just pedagogical change, it's political change, it's social change, it's financial change, and so on. So now, this teacher, for example, is like a window to the world for girl students. She teaches them, you know, things that girls must know, standing up for themselves, and so on. So those are examples. One last example that I want to give is about a mentor on our arms project. It's more like a spin-off. The kind of courage that she got by doing this project with her mentees and going around a big state in Gujarat, she's a teacher trainer. She said, now I've got so much courage that I've started learning to drive in her own life. She must be in her 50s or 40s, late 40s. She said, I now drive and I don't use public transport and I have a lot of time to read about teacher research. So she is doing a lot of that. She thinks that she's got that power in her now. And this is a teacher who also said, my husband has been asking me to migrate to Canada or England where he can set up a medical shop. But all this while I was not able to say anything. But now I really am very clear in my head. I'm doing so much work and I'm able to help teachers. And now I told him, if you have to, you insist on going, you can go, I'm not going with you. So this she told the mother-in-law as well, and then that was unheard of for the whole family, because she was a very docile daughter-in-law, and then it's a joint family. And she says she got this courage from this whole idea of doing teacher research, getting mentees to do. So they're taking things into their hands, and then they are really going beyond the boundaries drawn for them. And this is, I think, in a lot of ways sustainable. Although we haven't done any follow-up studies to see whether this kind of courage that they develop is sustained beyond the life of the project.
Okay.
But then with the learner agency bit, the young learners thing, learners are taking it forward, and so the teachers cannot sit quietly because it's sort of ongoing. Thank
okay.
you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Rana. And that last example shows us how teacher empowerment goes beyond just the classroom and what they do in schools and can sometimes have an impact on how they perceive themselves and how they live their life outside the school environment. We've got a very short time, just a couple of minutes. Are there any questions? Any reactions? Is there anything that resonates with your experience that you'd want to share? We'll be happy to hear that. Yes, please. They're also underpaid. Oh, doesn't that answer the question then?
They
pay them more.
Maybe people didn't
repeat the question.
Yeah, people didn't hear the question.
Ah, okay. Well, the question was that a colleague works with teachers who will not take any initiative, they won't take part in any discussions, or even if they took part in discussions and they found solutions to common problems because they work in difficult circumstances, they will not implement them, and she's not sure what can be done to make these teachers, you know. And her colleague said they are underpaid. So, yeah. Any thoughts about that? Could we start with that rather than another question? Yes. Do you want to respond?
Yeah. That teacher suggests topics. Yeah.
So that teacher suggests their own topics, what is relevant to them, because sometimes the inspectors and teacher educators tend to think that they know what teachers like and they expect teachers to respond to conform to them. I've actually been in a training in the north of Ghana, where the inspectors and the head teachers were preachers of teacher empowerment, and they're sitting in the room, and their attitude towards the teachers clearly counterproductive to teachers' own empowerment. So it does happen that teacher empowerment begins somehow should involve the teachers.
I don't want to appropriate this session because this is the end of a very long day. But I have had experience in two countries, in the Amazonian jungle and also in Ethiopia. Do you want Ethiopia or do you want the jungle?
The jungle.
Okay, let us go for the jungle. I've been living in Ecuador for about 8 years now, and there was a voluntary post deep in the Amazonian jungle to teach English to 208 indigenous Ottawa tribe, okay? So when we talk about difficult circumstances, I think we really need to say that they are difficult. This was a community that had no running water, they had no electricity, they had no course books, and they only had English teachers when there was a volunteer like myself. And I was working there for about 6 months. I did, because I was also teaching the staff, which was quite close to this community. Twice a week, on Mondays and Fridays, I was taken down by a boat to the school where I was teaching English. Never ever had I been taken down to a school by a boat. So what I did was, since we had two weeks speaking English, French, German, English, British, Canadian, two weeks coming to the hotel, what I did was, I asked these tourists to come to my classes. They observed my classes, and then at the end of the session, they engaged with my students. And I still have a lovely photograph of a Swedish grandmother looking in the eyes of a very handsome Ochoa male student, exchanging ideas about life, eating, and more, and things like that. So that is the jungle. And on another occasion, I can tell you about teaching on documents to sea gypsies, status to sea gypsies on the island of Borneo. And I still have a few of them. Thank you very much.
Thank you for sharing that experience. Thank you. Yes.
Okay. One of the things
that
we are beginning to understand that the real ELT world,
hold on,
and that the people out there,
hold on,
who are navigating the constraints of the environment and are creating impact, I have this little concern. If we look at the definition of difficult circumstances from 1960 up to now, we understand that the word difficult is related. It seems to me as though we have defined the context. We might also be leaving aside one serious issue. Those within that context, who have grown within that context, and who might not have had the opportunity of seeing something different from their ecology, we need to find out what they think about their context, if it is actually difficult. We might have some literature coming up from there.
I think in a way that was also covered in Amol's presentation when he showed the two classrooms and said the teacher in the classroom that looked like was a difficult context might actually say that there are no problems, and the other one might confuse. So, and I think there's recognition that difficulty is very relative now in the literature, there's recognition, and that we cannot a priori say a context is difficult unless the teachers do say they're difficult. However, it is also clear in the literature that
even where teachers are very used to doing something and it becomes part of their daily lives, insight into their daily experiences would do unveil the notion of difficulty. Coping doesn't mean that something isn't difficult. So yes, I agree, it's a complex concept and we cannot superimpose our conceptions of the world, our perceptions of the world on teachers. But the research is still going on and it's great that Eric is raising that, because you're one of the thought leaders of the Camerata research project now, and that would be good. It would be good to see what your members of the group say.
Take a question. Yeah.
Yes. Can we just take two more, one and another one? Yes.
My name is Eugenia Cabion. I come from Tierra del Fuego in Argentina, right? And well, just say, first of all, congratulations and thank you, right, for raising this topic and to talk about difficult situations and circumstances. Coming from a developing country, everything comes to be, right, a very difficult circumstance, especially in teaching. And just to share with a colleague about the payment, right, and the low payment, that is a whole issue for teachers also in Argentina. What I want to add is that the biggest change has to do with teacher education. And I think that it is there whether we can make these twists and offer our students, our teachers, student teacher, the possibility of experimenting in their practicum, right? Variety of circumstances and provide them with strategies and resources, right? To at least to give the initial right elements for them to start working in different contexts, right? And at the same time, I believe that I don't remember the name of the lady, but I thank the lady, Professor Ama, right? For naming Paulo Freire, right? Mm-hmm. And bringing the implication of the political position, right, of teaching, that it is never neutral. And as long as teachers recognize the dimension of the professional, the profession we have chosen, right, we will take more seriously and we will expand that teaching into something else that has to do with, helping students in their learning process with full dimension of what learning means, right? Either a foreign language or any other context. I think that that is the point, and that you have, in all the your examples have shown, right, different contexts in which learning happens, right? And this learning transforms students' reality and ways of seeing the world. So thank you very much for that. Right.
Guys, sorry to interrupt, so I have to recover the time in this recent room.
Right. So we, last statement, we are very grateful you stayed this long, and we hope the difficult circumstance that presented itself tells you a bit about where we work and the experiences that teachers might face. So thank you for being here, and let's keep the conversation going on.
Yes, sorry. Thank you.
Oh, okay, yeah. And please do visit our Facebook page, and if you want to join us, there is a TELCnet Facebook page, Teaching English in Difficult Circumstances, on Facebook, and please do sign up. Okay.